Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. This is Colin Cattell. Today I'm filling in for Karem Mermetlu, and I am going to be speaking with a good friend of mine, Jordan Roy Byrne of thedailygold.com. Now, if you've been a longtime listener of Palisade Radio, you've heard several past interviews that I've conducted with Jordan, and most all of them were during what one would call bear market conditions. So I'm excited to talk to Jordan today in a different kind of setting, which feels like the beginning of a bull market. Jordan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Colin. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, for sure. I want to start with, first of all, letting everybody know that you've just put out another book. It's very informative. It's about 100 pages, and it can be downloaded. We'll talk about, why don't we just say now, Jordan, what's the easiest way to get that book? Just we'll talk about it again at the end.
Just go to thedailygold.com. If you're not on my email list, you can opt in there. It's right at the top of the homepage, thedailygold.com.
Perfect. Okay, so we're going to circle back to the book towards the end of the discussion. I want to jump right in. Gold's broken through a 5-6 year resistance at 1350. It looks to me like it's clearly broken through. What's your feeling on, is this a bull market?
Well, I could take that question any number of ways. I mean, I pause for a moment because I'm not sure how long this particular move is going to last. I mean, you have some people like Paul Tudor Jones is saying 12 to 24 months. There's a few other analysts I follow that have been saying, I think this is a 6 to 12 month move. I mean, it's possible we get a huge move over the next 6 to 12 months, and then maybe we get some kind of a sizable correction for a year or two. So I mean, the outlook right now is very bullish, let's just say 6 to 12 months. But as far as projecting out 2 or 3 years, it's difficult to go that far. So I don't want to say, you know, we're about to start a multi-year run where there's not going to be any setbacks, because maybe this is a 12-month move and then we have a setback for a year or something like that. So it's very difficult to say. Because there's a lot of factors at play and we just don't know how they're going to turn out. But, you know, I have been saying over the last year and a half that the market will move when the Fed cuts rates, because gold is driven by real negative interest rates or declining real interest rates. And so basically for gold to rise, we need to see either rising inflation or rising inflation expectations or lower interest rates. And so lower interest rates means Fed cuts. And I went back 65 years. There were 12 or 13 cycles of the Fed moving from hiking to cutting rates. In 11 of those 13 cycles, the gold stocks had an average rise of, 160%. And the median rise was about 110%. Minimum was 55% or 60%. So looking at that data, I mean, that made me very confident that this market is going to move when the Fed cuts rates. Typically, the move tends to start several months after their last hike. But I looked at the cuts, and on average, it was like 1 to 2 months before the Fed would do its first cut. That's when gold stocks would start to move. So based on that, I mean, we're playing out exactly as we should. And as far as how long this move could last, it's just too early to say. There's too many factors we need to consider, such as, is the economy going to successfully reflate for another 2 years or even 3 years? Or are we going to go into a recession in 12 or 18 months? You know, what kind of policy do we get after that? So it kind of depends on those factors, but I am very bullish over the next 6 to 12 months. As far as 18 to 24 months, I think it's a little too early to call that. But I mean, I think that the days of, $1,000, $1,100 gold are long gone.
Yeah. Now, Jordan, I don't really invest in what you'd call gold majors or even intermediaries, maybe not even juniors. I'm really involved in investing in the micro caps. And if you look at an index like the GDX, GDXJ, HUI, they're all clearly in a bull market trend. But then if you look at, say, the TSX Venture, which is not maybe as pure as it used to be of an index for microcaps because of things like marijuana stocks. But in any case, the venture has actually been down over the last, you know, couple months. And outside of some isolated moves and some small moves in these microcaps, I haven't seen much yet. What's your feeling? Obviously, it's pretty normal that these things lag a bit.
Yes, it is. But I think the first thing we need to see, I mean, we're chatting here on Wednesday. Friday is the close of the month and the close of the quarter. And so assuming we close over 1360, 1370, that would be really bullish. I mean, essentially what I'm getting at is we need to confirm the breakout in gold. I mean, I think it's going to hold and be confirmed, but it hasn't happened yet. So I think after we confirm it, after we see more money come into the sector and this new higher, these new higher levels really get established, that should be the point when more money starts to go into the juniors. I mean, we had that huge, recall we had that huge move in the first half of 2016. There were juniors that still did really well, like a full year after the fact. So there, I mean, there could be a really big lag period. And so I would not be surprised if maybe it takes a couple more months for capital to really find its way into the juniors. But given where it looks like gold prices are headed, I mean, you have to be very bullish on the outlook for junior golds. I mean, the valuations are extremely low. And I mean, there's some real winners to be found there potentially.
Let's go back to your discussion around what starts a gold bull market. This took me a long time to wrap my head around, but it's actually quite simple, which is if you put aside any blips that cause a gold price rise or any of the kind of conspiratorial reasons that a gold bull market might start, the real reason it starts is because fund managers, money managers, who typically will put their money into, say, U.S. Treasury bonds, which netting out inflation makes some amount of money, even if small. As soon as that no longer makes money or they're actually losing money against inflation, they would rather hold gold because gold, in theory, doesn't make you any money, but it's better than losing money. Is that a pretty fair way to look at it?
Yes, that is a fair way to look at it, because I think sometimes here in the gold patch, we tend to ignore the fact that the real big money that really moves markets is, I mean, as you said, these are huge fund managers. They're managing hundreds of millions of dollars, I mean, billions of dollars in many cases. And, you know, this is why U.S. government bonds are such a great investment, because even though rates are extremely low, if you can get 2 or 3% on hundreds of millions or several billion dollars, or even tens of billions of dollars, I mean, that's a lot of income that you're producing. It's much, you know, it may not make sense for the average person. I mean, they're not going to make any money if they have their money in treasury bonds. But if you're, let's say you're a billionaire and you want to diversify, I mean, if you put $1 billion in treasury bonds and you're only getting 2%, that's still a shitload of money that you're taking in every year, a shitload of income, basically. So, but as you were saying, what happens is when real interest rates decline and they go negative, these people are they're losing money. They're, you know, it doesn't make sense for them to have money in the bank or have money in government bonds if they're only getting 1-2% and inflation is 3-4%. So that's really what moves gold. It's not, I mean, a lot of people like to talk about physical demand and, you know, Chinese demand. It's, you have to think it's Western based, it's huge money, it's family offices, it's huge hedge funds. They're the ones who really move the market, and it's investment demand. That's what you have to look at. And I talk about this in chapter one. Real interest rates are the driver. And what happens is when real interest rates go negative or they're declining sharply, is these big money managers, they put, that's when they, you know, buy ETFs and that sort of thing. And that, and so essentially when fundamentals turn bullish, again, real interest rates going negative or declining sharply, that's when you see investment demand really start to go higher. So those things go hand in hand. And that's what, again, drives bull markets and gold.
Okay, now, if we look at the kind of systematic issues in place right now, people look at the debt load that the U.S. government has, and they'll say the debt load's never been that high. But we have been in situations where there has been a lot of debt before, and the way that that's fixed is by having real interest rates essentially go negative. So if you have a low to zero interest rate and then you have an environment of 5-7% inflation over many years, you can actually knock that debt load down significantly. I think your book kind of points to the fact that this is what's going to inevitably have to happen. And should that not set up a very, very long-term kind of gold bull market?
Yes, it will. And if you look at what happened after World War II, I don't recall the dates exactly. It might have been 1945 to 1951 or even 1942 to 1951. In that period, the Federal Reserve basically, they were intervening in the market. They fixed the 10-year treasury. And they basically allowed inflation. It was very volatile then. A couple of years you had double-digit inflation. There was a year or two where it was close to zero. But that period from the mid-40s to the early 50s, that's exactly what you're talking about, that we inflated the debt away. The Fed funds rate was extremely low. I don't, recall it off the top of my head. I apologize for that. But they fixed the 10-year, I think it was 2% or maybe 2.2%. And there were a couple of years where you had double-digit inflation. So that's actually from that period in the mid-40s to the early 50s, like real GDP growth was really, really low through that entire period. But nominal GDP growth was really high because you had really high inflation. And that's what allowed the debt to be inflated away. And given the situation that we're in, which is the government has a huge amount of debt and interest rates have come up off secular lows a little bit. They're still very low, but the interest on the debt, I mean, we're looking at $500 billion or $600 trillion a year. And I have a chart in there in the middle of the book where I look at, what percentage of the government income is going to be made or what percentage will be comprised of interest payments. And in the last couple of years, that started to tick up. And I mean, that can become a real issue in the years ahead and I think it's going to become an issue in the next economic expansion when the recovery starts to take hold. And if we see inflation, which is also coming off a secular low, if we see inflation, and I'm talking about statistical inflation here, I'm talking about, which is basically commodity prices. So I'm not talking about the cost of living. When you're looking at inflation, just think of what commodity prices are doing year over year. And don't think about the cost of living. So if we see inflation in the next expansion get up to 3-4%, then normally you would want to have rates at like 5-6%. But there's way too much debt that would cause interest payments on the debt to be well over $1 trillion. And so what's inevitably going to have to happen, Colin, is what happened in the 40s, is where the government is going to have to intervene in the bond market. You're going to have an extremely low Fed funds rate, but they're going to have to intervene in even with the 10-year rate, maybe even the 30-year rate, and keep those at very low levels while inflation basically runs higher and higher. Now, I predict in the book that this is something, maybe we're 5-7 years away from that happening. Now, I could be wrong. Maybe it's 3-4 years away, or maybe it's 10 years away. But that, I think that's going to be the catalyst for, when we start to see the spiraling inflation that we all thought would happen, 9-10 years ago. And I mean, that's going to be a trigger for much, much higher gold and silver prices. I mean, that's when you're going to see silver go above $50 an ounce and, get to 100, and gold trading probably, above 3,000, 4,000.
Yeah, well, just kind of interject a couple positive opinions here. You've touched on the fact of how bad the bear market was that we've had up until this point, how long it was. And typically, if not always, bull markets are longer than the preceding bear market. Capital just gets destroyed faster than it's built. And then you've got this feeling that the gold price is broken out of a five-year window. You've got the major mining companies all in, you know, what I would call bull market territory. And then you move down to these junior companies, and this happens every time where you have the confidence of knowing that gold is moving, and unless something big comes up, you know, it's in the right direction, and you still have this opportunity to get these small mining exploration and development stocks at the bear market prices. And I'm sure you're focusing a lot of your time trying to figure out which of those kind of to pick, but it's certainly an exciting time right now, no?
Absolutely. And I think what people need to understand is, or at least what I talk about in the book, is there's, if we're looking for a historical period, which is analogous to where we are, the best comparison looks to be maybe the earlier mid 60s. So, you know, and I'm looking at long-term inflation cycles. And in the last answer, I talked about, you know, this could be 3, 4, 5, 7 years away, you know, when we have to copy the policy of the 1940s and let inflation run. But where we are, Colin, we're in the very early stages of something that's going to last probably another 15 years, maybe even another 20 years, you know, based on historical inflation cycles, because the next super inflation peak looks to be 2035 to 2040. And that just tells you how far we have to run. So we are at the, you know, we're in the early stages of something that's going to last 15 or 20 years. There's probably going to be a few harsh bear markets in there for gold stocks, but gold stocks are going to perform fabulously well over the next 15 to 20 years. And we are, you're talking about valuations, Colin. I mean, we, the valuations that we saw in the middle to the end of 2015, even cheaper than where we are now. But where we are now, I mean, you're talking about historically like the 95th or 97th percentile of cheapness for gold stocks. We're just in 3, 4, 5, 7 years from now, we're just never, we're, it's going to be difficult to imagine, you know, in 5, 10, 20 years, how cheap things were around the, you know, the 2015 to 2018 time period. So this is, I mean, not only do we have a great opportunity to make a lot of money in the gold stocks over the next several years, but this is, I mean, this is something that's going to last 10, 15, maybe even 20 years. There will be a couple bear markets in there, but I mean, we are just at the start of something that is going to be just historic over the next, again, you know, 10, 15, 20 years.
If you look at the fundamental issues within the gold sector itself as well, and I know a lot of people tout these facts when they're giving talks. I've never really adhered to them that much. But you've got very few discoveries made in the last several years. You've got, you know, production, it has been hampered. There was a lot of bad practices put in place when we had $1,800 gold, and these mining companies have had to really cut back. And so one would think that just from a supply-demand side, gold's going to have to really jump up significantly to spur the kind of exploration dollars required to go out and find some new deposits. Because at the end of the day, the only thing an exploration company is looking for, or I should say a mining company is looking for from an exploration co, is a potential mine to buy. And there's just not very many of them out there, which means a lot of new ones are going to need to be discovered.
Well, what you're talking about, I mentioned this in the book, is that those things are not bullish for the gold price. Because again, the gold price is, gold price is not driven by supply and demand. It's a monetary asset. So you have to think in terms of real interest rates in the dollar in currencies. And that's why, you know, and I talk about this in the first chapter, because gold demand, most of gold demand is jewelry demand. And that demand rises when the price falls. So in the 80s and 90s, I mean, gold demand was growing and supply wasn't really growing that much, but still the price is going, you know, sideways to lower. That was for monetary reasons. However, with that being said, what you're talking about, that's bullish for the juniors. That's bullish for the individual companies. It's not bullish for the gold price. But Colin, given this macro picture that I'm talking about over the next, you know, 10, 15 years, I mean, if that comes to fruition, I mean, we are setting up for another not a bubble, but a true mania in the juniors. I mean, 10, 15 years from now, just imagine what's going to happen to the juniors when we have gold breaking past $2,000 an ounce. And by the way, when it does that, it's probably the measured target from that move is probably 2750, 2800, something around there. But just imagine when that happens, what's going to happen to the juniors? Because that's when the fundamentals for the what you're talking about as far as the industry, and there's not enough high margin deposits, and you know majors are having trouble replacing production and reserves. I mean, when you have a gold price that's rising, going to all-time highs and making records in that environment, that's when you get not a bubble, that's when you get a mania in the juniors. So I I'm super bullish on the juniors, and it's just a question of, you know, when are we can make a lot of money before the bubble and mania. But given what you said, Colin, and given my macro outlook for gold over the next 10 to 20 years, that's why there is going to be another mania in the juniors. I mean, I don't think it's 3 or 5 years away. I think it's 10, 15 years away. But there's not going to – I mean, first there will be a bubble, but it'll turn into a full-blown mania.
Well, that's an exciting way to leave our interview, and an optimistic thing for somebody like yourself to say. I would direct everybody who's had a chance to listen to this to go to thedailygold.com, and it just says right at the top, enter your email, and you will get Jordan's book for free in your inbox immediately. And if you want to give it a full read through, it took about an hour, hour and a half, but there's certainly a lot of kind of light skimming to go through and get the crux of Jordan's discussion. Jordan, thanks so much for coming on. We'll aim to do this again, and it'll be interesting to see how things play out for the rest of the year. This is certainly the beginning of something exciting.
Yes, that appears to be the case, Colin. Thank you so much for having me.
Think you understand the junior mining sector, and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?